it's not a disclaimer, but just so in case we make a movie based on your life about this, you can't sue us. But they said it's some. I can't even read my writing, but just that we'll be sending this tape to the Hall of Fame, but Sabre reserves the right to distribute the tape to researchers and other people if that's okay with you. Okay, and then you also have the right to remain silent. And well, let's just start back at the beginning a little bit. Now, you were born in St. Louis. Did I read that correct? Mm-hmm. Did you grow up in St. Louis also?
Right. Yeah. Let's see. Where should we start at? Just living in St. Louis and born in St. Louis?
Yeah.
Where we went to high school at?
Well, what was it like growing up in St. Louis in those days for a kid?
Well, all my relations were truck farmers in St. Louis, and that's hard work.
Yeah, more. I did it one day, I know.
Were
your parents farmers too?
Oh, yeah. That was my ambition as a kid. Now, I did tell my mother then I was going to be a baseball player.
Is that right? Where did that come from?
I had an uncle that, around that time, each little area around St. Louis, they had their own teams.
Yeah.
On Sunday.
The town team.
Yeah, on Sunday, that was a place to go to the ball.
Sure.
Watch it play ball. And somewhere along the line, I don't know, we had an aunt, a second aunt. And we would visit them every so often, and next door to them, they were friends of Babe Ruth's and Lou Gehrig's.
Is that right?
And, they were somewhere or another. I guess I never did meet them, but they were talking to them about me. And I got several bats that had been cracked.
Yeah.
And they brought them over and gave them to them, and they wouldn't give them to me. They were Lou Gehrig's bat.
Kidding.
Ones that weren't really broke, they were just kind of splintered.
Yeah.
And we could put
tape around
nails on
them
and put some screws into them and tape them up.
Yeah.
But I sure wish I had some now.
Right now they'd be worth some money. What happened to them? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea.
It's like so many things we had at one time. You wonder what happened to them.
Baseball cards, too.
What
happened to them either. That was my pride and joy. Lou Gehrig's bat.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, how old I was at that time, but I could hardly pick it up and swing it. I mean, it was three times.
Yeah.
I mean, their bats were big and heavy.
Yeah, 38, 40 ounces in those days, I think.
And, I still swung it, but then.
So you got kind of hooked on baseball then?
Oh, yeah. I always did say I was going to be a baseball player.
And when did you start actually playing baseball? How old were you when you...
Because
they didn't have little leagues in those days.
In high school, we didn't have baseball teams. We had softball teams. And I played volleyball in high school. We had volleyball, basketball, and track. And in high school, and I was a senior year, we won our first county basketball tournament for the high school, which high school had never won a county basketball tournament. And when I threw the shot, discus, and track, well, for a number of years, I had a discus record, and a discus, and I remember, it probably don't hold up anymore, but...
sure it does. So you were pretty athletic when you were a kid. Now, when did you start, did you play softball too then?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What position did you play then?
I was catching. And that's why I like to catch, and I was catching, and I got in service, and, played in Manila, and first got in the fifth replacement depot.
Now you were playing softball then, or baseball?
Baseball then.
Ah, okay.
And somewhere along the line, in the fifth replacement depot, they were all officers, and I was the only non-com that was playing with them.
Now, how did you get on the baseball team? Did they? They just say whoever wants to be on the baseball team.
They just saw it on my record that I played, and. They got me.
Now let me back up a little bit to high school. How good of a softball player were you?
I thought I was pretty good.
Yeah, you probably were.
You realize you play the game well, but I mean how good you are, you don't.
Yeah,
How good you are, you don't know.
So the first real baseball you played though was in service.
In service. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, we played baseball around sitting like on a lot, and we had made up teams, and we
choose up sides.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Would you care for a cold drink or coffee?
Well, you know, I think I mentioned to Elmer I was going to charge him a cup of coffee, but I think a soda or something would be even better right now.
Okay, we've got Diet Coke.
But nothing, nothing organized. No, you didn't play in the town teams or anything.
No, we didn't have any. And then I got service, and then after I got service, I met up with at this time an older fellow, and it was Gordon Marshberger. You hear him?
Yeah, sure I did. Maltzberger.
Marshberger.
Yeah.
Gordon, and he was older than I was at the time, and I was fetching and pitching, and he took me on the side and told me, forget about that pitching. He said, anybody can throw like you do.
Really?
You stick to pitching.
Now, where did that come from, your ability? I mean, did you just pick up a baseball and just throw? I mean, what did you have at that time? Missed out of fastball.
Just fastball, yeah. And that's right.
You can get by in that for a while.
Yeah, well, that's what, I mean, excuse me, I could throw a ball through a brick wall and that kind of stuff. You know,
Well, you're a big farm kid. Is that where a lot of it comes from?
I mean, I could sit down at behind home plate and have to get up to throw to second. I mean, that's throw to second without jumping up and taking three or four steps.
Okay. And he saw something there that...
He told me, anybody can throw like that. He says, you keep, forget about that catching. Pitching. So then we played against the Manila Dodgers. And that's when Ernie Wynn was there, and Guardiola, and Max Macon. And
oh, really?
All those guys.
Yeah. Max Macon played for the old Milwaukee Brewers for a while. I remember him well.
He was from Georgia up there.
Ah.
And, and they wanted me to come to play with them, and I pitched against them, and I've done all right, but, I mean, and this one... They wised me up too. Says, "Well, you can't always throw the ball by them. You gotta come up with something else besides." they're gonna wait on that one all the time. And so then I had to work on change up and curve.
Now, who taught you how to do that?
Just some of these guys in the service. I mean, like Gordon Marshberger and some of the other guys. And, they were wanting me to come to play in them. At the Manila Dodgers, but we didn't really win in Guardiola and them. But then I was in the fifth replacement depot, and we were, and they froze us in there, so I couldn't get transferred out. So I'd stay there then.
So you there was a couple of big leaguers that you faced then.
I can just remember like Ernie Wynn and Guardiola and Joe Ginsburg.
Yeah.
And last year I saw Joe, first time I saw Joe Ginsburg was over here at the baseball alumni game.
Oh, really?
At the Red Sox Stadium.
Yeah.
And he walked across the diamond with Bob Feller, and I could see their name on it. I wouldn't recognize them. Some of them had their name on the back.
Mm.
So then a little later I went over and put my hands on Ginsburg's back and turned around and he looked at me and he says, "I know you." And I mentioned my name, so I went embarrassed. "Oh, yeah, Philippines."
That was, if you remember it, huh? I'll be darned.
We had a little conversation then.
Yeah. Well, you had said when you were a kid that you wanted to do this. Oh, yeah. And now here you're at least doing it in the service.
Mm-hmm.
What happened after you got out of service then? Did you keep on playing with different teams in the service?
Well, I just played with the same team in the service. And then I came back out and had a...
Oh, thank you, Merlin. That looks delicious.
Regular Coke?
I'm going to grab the regular if you don't mind.
That's
One thing. Just to back up a little bit again, when you were a kid and you said you were going to be a baseball player for a living, what did your parents think of that?
Well, I told my mother then, that I was going to be a baseball player and I was going to be able to I don't know if I said put a Ford, but I was going to build her a big house. Got to be a baseball player, but that never happened.
Well, you did one out of the two.
But, I can say this. I mean, my grandparents, they lived like from here to that house over there. And I would, and they used to tell my parents that, hey, let them kids go play ball all the time for it. I mean, they should be working.
Yeah. Because they're going to be in the farm just like we were.
Yeah, they're working. So letting them play ball.
Wasting time like that.
But then after I did sign with Brooklyn, well, he was one of my fans then.
Oh, beautiful.
That, I mean, they shouldn't be playing ball. They shouldn't be working.
Well, you know, you hear that story from kids all the time. Mm-hmm. And there's very, very few who make it. Well, what now? When you got out of service, you went to Wake Forest. Did you go to Wake Forest directly from service, or was there a couple of steps in between?
Well, there was a. I came back out of service, and then met a fellow in the service too that was graduated at Wake Forest, and he got me a scholarship at Wake Forest on basketball and baseball.
Oh, really?
And then I lettered my freshman year in basketball and baseball, but then when I walked into the gym at Wake Forest, and there was three or four of us walking in at the same time.
Sure.
Walking into the gym, we're looking around, and off to the office on the side there was a head football coach, and that was P. Head Walker.
Oh, I've heard of him.
And he says, hey, big boy, what are you doing? What are you doing here? And, come here, I want to talk to you. And he called, did you ever play? I said, what are you doing here? In baseball and basketball. You ever play football? No, sir. And we didn't. We played in Sandlot.
Sure.
In high school. And you're going to play football here. But then we had spring baseball practice down in behind the valley. And he would be over on his platform with his foghorn up on the and drag them on the side and put somebody else in. And, well, we would be shagging a few fly balls.
Yeah,
having a good time.
The easy life, yeah.
And in the evening, after we got done working out, we'd be back in, we all ate at the same training table. And we'd be done eating and coming out when these football players would just be coming in, they're dragging. And they're
well, a big incentive to play football, wasn't it? So ended your football career?
I never played. Too many advised me then not to play football. That was.
Well, who was your coach at Wake Forest? Your baseball coach?
I got his name on.
His first name was Coach, probably. Well, not yeah. But did you learn more about pitching from him, or is it just a matter of, hey, a guy who can pitch, I'm going to throw him in?
Just more or less picking up as you go.
Yeah.
The other guys and stand on the sideline throwing and so forth. And then, I went down there in that summertime, met in the service with also Harry Goheen. He had a scholarship. He was a catcher, and he had a scholarship to Notre Dame.
Oh.
And so he lived in Huntington, West Virginia. And then he called me a year later. Then he said, "Well, we haven't seen each other for a year since we got out of service." He says, "These teams down here in Kentucky are looking for a pitcher." And he says, "He had a summer job, you know." And he said, "Well, it'd be a good chance for us to get together." He said, "They pay a little bit and room and board." And
yeah, good summer job.
Okay. So I hopped the bus and went down there and stayed with him about a week, and then we went over to, he took us over to Pikeville, Kentucky, north to Louisa, Kentucky. And Louisa, Kentucky, I had managed and sponsored a team. I don't remember his name, but he owned a lumber company. His father owned it, and he owned it now, and so forth. So So we stayed at his house, a two-story house, and we got some bedroom upstairs, and his wife made breakfast for us every day.
Nice, and so forth. And so you worked for him and then played ball on
the
weekends?
We didn't work, we just played ball.
Oh, really?
And we won, I guess they call it a county then. Then we went to the state championship, which was in Pikeville, Kentucky. We lost out. Pikeville was, Weasel lost out, and Pikeville was, they were wanting me to come over to pitch for Pikeville. Mm-hmm. And our manager then wanted me to, they called him and wanted me to come over, and I said, well, I don't know if I want to go. And I said, well, Harry went with me.
Yeah.
And well, yeah, they take me.
You were a teenager then, weren't you?
Well, we were 21.
Yeah, okay. Just around the...
And they called him, I don't know if they take Harry too. Oh yeah, they take Harry too. So then we both went over to Pikeville, and we played for Pikeville. And we won the state championship of Kentucky for Pikeville.
Wow.
And from there we went to Wichita, Kansas.
That's where the national tournament
is. Semi-pro tournament out there.
Ah, I remember that.
I had a couple pitchers, and I don't remember the game. I don't remember which game I pitched, but the game I pitched in, I had 16 strikeouts.
Wow.
And I think the 18 was a record. And about the fourth or fifth inning, one of the scouts were coming down, leaving their cards with the manager, wanted to see me. He wouldn't talk to me during the game. So then after that evening, at the hotel, he was standing outside and I was inside, and the scouts were coming in wanting to talk to me. And
in that particular game, was that again mostly fastballs, or had you developed a repertoire by that time?
Well, I got a little curveball, I didn't know too much about the changeup, but I mean just probably changing up on a curveball and a little spin on it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But mostly fastball. And so then they had a book coming that they put out. I don't know if I could even find it now. But as they recommended players that would mostly succeed, and they had, a team that would mostly succeed, and I was on that team.
Hmm. So you things were working for you. People noticed it. How many teams came after you then?
Oh, there's quite a few of them. I know Cardinals and Braves and Browns and Cleveland and there's quite a few of them.
Now, why did you end up with the Dodgers?
Well, I remember Cleveland scout, and I've still got some letters from Bill Veeck when he was when he was with Cleveland.
Sure. And he owned the Milwaukee Brewers years before.
Yeah. And he was with the Browns, too.
Yeah.
But then he was at Cleveland at this time. And the Cleveland scout was talking to me, and when I got letters from Bill, which he, called him or wrote him or whatever, and Bill Veeck was wanting me to come up to Cleveland. I shouldn't sign with anybody until I come up to Cleveland. I was supposed to work out, and the letter mentioned work out with Bob Feller.
Mm. That'd be kind of exciting. I mean, he was an icon.
And the other clubs too. I was at that time. I guess I didn't realize, how good I was or whatever, But I was interested in going to Cleveland and working out with Bob Feller and going to some of these other ballparks just to see him.
Sure.
And the Brooklyn scout in Wichita, he put me on a train from Wichita and sent me to Brooklyn to work out with Ebbets Field.
Mm-hmm.
And so he put me on a train, went to Brooklyn and got a cab and went out to the ballpark, out to Ebbets Field. And they were expecting me, and the game was in process when I got there. They put me back in the clubhouse in the corner and gave me a suit. And then after the game was over, Sukeforth was catching,
Yeah, Clyde is support. Yeah.
He came in and got me, and we went out on the mound. And
now, what was, before you went out, what was going through your mind and inside and outside when you were during this whole thing? Or were you just
kind of...
Just doing it, yeah.
Just kind of out of it, mm-hmm. I guess. And he took me out on the field, and we warmed up, and then there was a number of people in the dugout, too. We had mingling around, and which I didn't know any of them. Of course, mm-hmm. Press people, and I think, well, I didn't know it at the time, but Manchurky Sr. was there, and Junior were there, because that was the ones that were supposed to come there to work out far. But I didn't know them at the time until they came out. And I was warming up, and by that time, the shadows were starting to cross the field, and Sukworth, he had problems catching. Catch me, I know. And one empty ballpark, I mean, the ball was hopping, you know.
Sure.
And well, they were in a dugout, and they weren't paying much attention first, but after they heard it popping, then they, I guess the ears came up, and then they were out there all around. And and one thing that happened then, I don't recall it, but this is another kind of another story. I mean, Bantricky was out there, and I was throwing hard, and he said, "Let's see your fastball." And I said, "My fastball or my real fastball?" Because I was just throwing harder. He wanted me to rear back and throw. And Gargiola picked this up someplace. And when we lived in Indianapolis, I was driving around 465 one day, and he used to get these little tidbits on the radio, and he mentions that rookies have some of the funniest things to say sometimes. And he says, this rookie could come in to work out in Ebbets Field with Mr. Rickey, and Mr. Rickey asked him to see his fastball, and he said, "My fastball, my real fastball."
and you knew that guy, huh?
And then he says, the rookie was Elmer Sexar, and this was, you know, I don't know.
And you were listening in?
I just had the radio going, you know, but I wasn't paying much attention to him until he said Elmer Sexar.
Wow.
Rang a bell. And,
oh, that's great.
Well, anyway, then that happened when I was there, and then after I got them warming up, they talked to me a little bit, and I don't remember any details on it, but then... He assigned Ranch Rickey Jr. And I was there for a week in Brooklyn.
They wanted to keep you there. Huh? Yep. They didn't want you going around.
Yeah, that's right. And he was with me day and night. And I stayed in the St. George Hotel. And he'd take me back. We'd go over to New York, to the Radio City, to the Rockettes and fancy places to eat, you know. And just every night we were doing something. And take me back to the hotel, and you give me spending money to buy a newspaper or magazine or something like that.
And no, you were a kid from Missouri and Kentucky, and what kind of an impression was all this?
Well, it was living high.
Yeah. I like this.
Old farm boy.
Yeah,
sure. Never had much to begin with, so we ate, but we didn't have material things.
Yeah.
And then going to New York and seeing the Rockettes and the Radio City and the Music Hall, and there's all these places you eat with Ranch Rickey Jr. Where how do you go in these places? They got all the napkins, you know, stuffed out, and white tablecloths and all the fancy.
Like 10 pieces of silverware out there, yeah.
And I think I probably said something about what should I start with? And he says, I'm paying for it. You can eat it with your fingers. It doesn't make any difference.
So he tried to relax you, too.
Yeah.
Well, let me jump back again for a second. How many brothers and sisters did
you have? I have one brother.
Okay. Wait, older or younger than you?
3 years. Almost 3 years older.
Oh, okay. Was he a ball player, too?
No, he didn't. He was just the opposite.
Hmm.
He was good at it, but he just didn't. Sports just didn't.
Yeah, not interested. Okay. So they were. So the Dodgers were putting the screws to you.
And... Well, every day he'd pick me up and we'd go down to the office, and they had a big board in there and show me how to keep track of all their players and what the managers would send in. Tom is on all the players, and how they kept track of you, and you wouldn't get lost in organization. And
they were probably had the most organized minor league system in baseball at that time.
I think so. And that went on for a week. And I was still interested in going to Cleveland and these other places just to, like I said, I didn't think I didn't realize I was that good, I guess. But I mean, you figure you're good, but how good?
Sure.
And
it hadn't sunk in yet.
I was just interested in going to these other places just for the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they put me on the, and I said, they want me after all week, but then they talked about signing with them and so forth. And I had to go home and talk it over with, and I said, my dad, I mean, he wasn't that up on that kind of stuff or signing or anything mm-hmm. like that. And back then, you didn't have managers or agents or anything like that.
Yeah,
so
you're on your
everybody
own.
Everybody made their own. So I said, I had to go back and talk to my uncle, which I didn't have in mind, but just trying to get an excuse to get out. So, okay. So they put me on the train, and they gave me how much money to spend to read newspapers or magazines on a train mm-hmm. and eat on a train going back and so forth. And got home and somewhere in St. Louis at that time, in Union Station. And I didn't call ahead, or they didn't know when I was coming. I just have to get to St. Louis and get on the bus and go home. If I was just stop back in Milwaukee. And got off, stepped off the train, and George Sisler and his wife was standing there.
No kidding.
And they wanted to know if I was Elmer. Stepped off, and if I was Elmer Sexire, and he introduced herself and said, "If you know if there's anybody meeting me," and could they take me home? And and he spent a week with me, and each time I kept, trying to put it off, and I got signed with him.
You never got to Cleveland?
No, never did.
Okay.
And I signed with him before he could get up there. But, the pressure was just there.
Sure, yeah.
And
well, it sounds like they were good at selling, I mean, in a positive sense, and they...
Yeah, they sold me on the organization.
Yeah.
I mean, that... I believed in it, later on, I just was sold on the organization, that they took care of their players and knew where they were at. And
sure, I know Ricky was famed for that, his development of that system. Well, so then you went to spring training with Danville then? Is that how it started out?
Yeah, well, I went to spring training. And in spring training, it was at Vero Beach, and that was when Dodger Town. I mean, there was the old barracks and the old canvas bags out there with grapefruit and orange juice in them, which you drank. And they had so many people there, you wonder how they ever kept track of you, but they did. And one of them, they had every day, had you in sliding pits or batting or pickoffs and breaks and leads. I mean, they really gave you the works.
So it was good training.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Branch Rickey, I mean, he had me in the in pitching. They put a string up there like a strike zone.
Oh, yeah. I've seen pictures of that,
And they'd have a head, I don't know who was catching, but he'd be out there wanting me to throw curveballs, and he was trying to work with me to throw a drop like that. And every time you throw a strike, I mean, I don't know, he gave you a dollar or something like that.
Now Branch Rickey himself was out there.
Yeah, he was right there.
So he was really a hands-on.
Yeah, he was right there. I mean, let me just throw a drop over, throw it through the overhand.
Did you ever get it?
No, I didn't get that. So then, anyway, that's when they sent me to Danville.
Now, who were some of the other guys that were in that camp that you recall? Anybody in particular?
Well, Grosher was there then, and all the The whole Dodgers team. And, I mean, everybody was just mixed in. I mean, mm-hmm. It didn't make any difference who you were or where you were.
Yeah.
Class D ball or C ball or whatever. Chuck Connors, he was there.
And, he was before his TV rifle, days. First baseman, as I recall.
Yeah.
Well, now, when did they decide you were going to tell you you were going to Danville?
I don't know when I got told that. just somewhere along the line.
I mean, well, that wasn't too far from home, though. I mean, relatively.
No, it was all right. Mm-hmm. So then what I was having a good year at Danville.
You had a super year, yeah. 2.25 ERA.
And then I, with a sure finger here, I was in the bullpen catching a warming up pitcher one night, and between, and I got hit on the finger here with him. Went back in, and you didn't, as a catcher, you didn't put your hand behind you like that. You know, you caught the ball, you got the ball, and you quick,
get rid of it right, pop right out of your mitt.
And I had my hand there, trying to get back, and I got the ball on the tip of it. And I had a split. And I was out in about several weeks on that. And
wow.
The manager, and then Paul Shevchenko was the manager then. No, he was mad.
That you should
no
have
more,
been.
No more pitchers in a boat.
How far through the season were you when that happened?
Well, that was probably about the middle of the season someplace.
Okay, so you're out a couple weeks then. Now, did that affect your effectiveness after that?
Not that I noticed.
Okay. But it just cost you a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So then it was late in the season, and, well, scouts, periodically scouts were there, and I remember George Sisler coming down, and then Branch Rickey Jr. They kind of followed one another, and, a couple weeks between them, and Sisler, and then Branch Rickey Jr., and then Senior came.
So they were keeping their eye on you.
And I didn't know if they were or not.
Yeah.
I mean, but then when the senior came, I had pitched like 2 days before, and Shevchenko came and asked me if I could pitch on the third day. Branch Rickey was senior was in, and he wanted to see me pitch. And what are you going to say?
No, I don't feel like it.
So anyway, I don't remember detail. A pretty good game, I guess. I don't remember exactly what happened, but then the next day in the paper, it said that Branch Rickey was in town and looking over some of his ball. I think we were in probably second or third place and still in a playoff.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in town looking at some of the ball players, nobody special, but he wasn't going to take anybody away from the team because we were in the playoff.
Yeah.
And we had left to go to Springfield, Illinois, and we were in Springfield, and Shevchenko brought me a telegram and said I should push a report to Brooklyn.
Oh, really? How did that feel?
Oh, great.
Well, because that's why you were there. That's why everybody plays.
And that's when Don Lenhart, he was and some of the other guys, Springfield had a pretty good club then, too.
Yeah.
And,
somebody, this friend of mine who compiles all these records, said that you were second or third to Lou Burdett in earned run average that year.
I think that's right. Mm-hmm. He was at the Yankees. He had some good years. Well, he was at Boston too, I think.
He started with it. He was, especially the Milwaukee Braves. That's my team, of course. I was a young kid in those days.
Some good years.
Yeah, but he apparently you were second to him or third to him, something like that. Yeah, walked 61, strike out 132 in 136 innings.
Mm-hmm.
That's an average of 9 a game. So you must have some pretty good. And
one game.
I'm going to leave this with you too. Just I don't know if you ever saw it. Who were some of the guys that you played with Danville? And anybody else from that team?
Nobody. Well, Dick Teed. came up. I
remember the name.
I don't think Dick, he got, I don't think he even got a time at bat.
What's it, how do you spell his name, do you know?
T-R-E-E-D, I think.
Yeah, let's see, we got everybody here. Got T-E-E-D?
T-R-E-E-D, I think.
Let's see, Dick Teed. 53 Dodgers, he was, no, you're wrong, he was up one time. And he struck out.
Okay.
So
well, he was a catcher.
Okay, yeah, he did make it.
Bob Milliken.
Oh, I remember Bob Milliken. He had a little bit of a career, didn't he?
Yeah, uh-huh. He was Cardinals and pitching coach and so forth for the Cardinals.
L-I-K.
I think they were only two that...
Okay, but which was probably about the odds in those days anyway. Now, what kind of training did you get at Danville? I mean, did they attempt to, you know, you had all of the training and development at Dodgertown. Did that carry over then when you were?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then, in Dodgertown, you always had pitching coaches working with you. And, well, like I say, Brantrick, he was out there working with you. And, I mean, after he would leave, pitching coaches would be there.
Now, what was your manager's name again?
Paul Shevinkel.
Now, what kind of a manager was he? What was his style?
I think he caught a little bit in the majors.
Yeah.
A short time too.
Mm-hmm.
He was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good guy.
Well, so
and as a catcher, I mean, he knew what was going on too. So
yeah. I guess as a catcher, you know both sides of it pretty well. You know about pitching too. I interviewed a guy named Don Pavlevic in Milwaukee. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, and he was up there for about 10 or 12 years, and you get to be almost a pitching coach, I think, when you're behind there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got the call, pretty exciting?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, then I had to go back, from Springfield, go back to Danville. And
now, were you married at that time?
Oh, no.
Okay.
And while we were going together.
Mm-hmm.
I got a picture out there in the garage. And getting on a train, the president of the Free I League shaking hands with me.
Oh, really?
And,
yeah.
Wish me luck or something.
Yeah.
I think he asked me a question about, think I could pitch in a major league. And, oh, yeah, I could pitch.
Piece of cake. So you arrived on, what was he like walking into Ebbets Field then and meeting all these guys that you probably didn't really know?
Well, then I went, I flew into Ebbets, New York then. I had to catch a train out of Danville to Chicago and then got a plane into New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then got a cab. Mm-hmm. And they told me.
Okay.
No, Pat.
I got in the Ebbets Field, and Danville wasn't making that much money neither, so I had to pay a cab fare, you know, from the plane to the Ebbets Field, and I paid it, and I don't know how much money, I don't know, I gave him a couple of dollars tip, I think, and I could still hear him, I'm walking.
I know you're
I'm
a cab driver, you
I'm walking to the center, and he's jabbering away, and I come from all of that, and that's all I'm going to get.
Hey, they're really endearing, those guys.
Oh, yeah. So then we got in, there was a game going on, so I'm taking my suitcase along with me and going in and sitting in the clubhouse and waiting. Right after the game, they're going to Boston. I had to catch a train, so I just take my bag and
go
along with them.
Mm-hmm.
And got in Boston and I got my uniform the next day at the clubhouse and do a little run around shagging and so forth, and sitting on a bench. And
now, how were the other guys? Toward, did they, you know, they had been playing as a team all year long, and this young kid comes up. How were they toward you?
Real good.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've been sitting on the bench to this game, and somebody brought a book over to the golf course about a month ago, and Carl Erskine's got a book out, the tidbits of from the Dodger dugout.
Oh, really?
And he's got one page in there about me.
No kidding.
And this is a story he tells, and sitting in, during the game, the Dodgers are always good at riding the umpires and so mm-hmm. forth. And,
was DeRosa the manager then?
No, Schotten.
Bert Schotten was. Okay, I think DeRosa started off that year.
The year off.
Then Ray Blades managed a couple of games, then Schotten, yeah.
And they were riding the umpire behind home plate, and the umpire gave him a warning a couple times, you know. Finally, he takes a couple of steps toward the dugout, and I was, "You're out of here, get out!" And, Boston, that time of year, it's cold up there, and we had big, long coats on. And nobody could see your number or anything like that. And he looks hard and, "Get out, you're out!" And he turned around and starts standing behind the home plate, and he's not starting until somebody goes. And everybody's sitting on, the rest of the guys sitting on the bench are all pointing, you know, they're ready. The guys are ready to go because they want to go take their shower. And who, me? Me?
They all want to get thrown out.
They all want to go. And during that time, Bert Schotten gets up on the, he's on the bench, and I'm way down on the other end.
Yeah.
Not saying boo to anybody. I wouldn't open my mouth. I had a mouthful
right.
of it. So he gets up and looks on the bench, I don't think he knew my name before that goes. He looks down and he says, "Hey, big boy, you go."
Yeah. So you got thrown out of one of your first games.
So I'm sitting there, you know, I don't want to go, and everybody else to go. Go ahead. Go get your shower. It's cold out here. Go ahead. So I'm sitting there, and I still don't want to go. And so finally, you got to go. So
yeah.
In Boston, you got to walk behind home plate to get to the Braves dugout to get to the clubhouse at that time. And so I got up, crate across behind home plate, and threw the dugout. And never did turn around to see who it was. And nobody in the stands knew who it was because we had numbers, big jackets on them, no numbers, so they couldn't tell who to throw it out.
Tell me you should be ashamed of yourself getting through.
That was the first ball game I've been in. I got thrown out. So that's what Erskine tells a story, and he told it in that book, too.
That's a great story. Now, how long were you up there before you got in your first game?
And then the next day I was in the ball game.
Now tell me about that. How?
I don't remember the exact.
Relief pitcher.
It was relief. The game was already lost, I guess, considered lost, so that's the reason they put me in.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody said if we would have got a hit or something, like a couple hits or something, we had some men on base, and I could have been the winner, he said, but I wasn't the loser.
Yeah. Remember who you faced at all?
I don't
Is that
remember.
Just still pretty vague?
Yeah, I don't remember who we were. And then the next game I got into was in New York against the Giants. And they brought me in with the bases loaded.
Mm.
And I remember Johnny Mize coming up. And that's when I walked. And I walked two or three of them.
I think you walked two altogether. Nobody ever got hit off you?
No.
Ever?
Come close.
Here. Yeah, two games. One earned run, two walks, yeah.
Oh.
You got two guys out and walked two.
But
Mize was one of the
Mize
Giants.
Mize was one of them coming up, on the polo.
That was scary enough right there.
Hit that little pop fly,
Yeah.
And when the base is loading, I'm going to try not to give him anything too good to hit. So I walked somebody else.
That sounds pretty smart to me.
So then they brought somebody else in. So that was the end of my career.
Now that was pretty much the end of the season too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now tell me about, obviously everybody wants to know about Jackie, but man, there were a lot of, and my guess is in that short stay, you didn't get to really know these guys really well, but who really made an impression on you?
Parky Vaughn was then, and he, that was one of He took just him and I. He said, "It was just you and I are going out to eat tonight."
Oh, really? Yeah.
And
he was an old veteran at that time.
Yeah. And just him and I went out to eat. And a whole bunch of us. After a game, they always included anybody. We're going to go here or go eat. Come over and give you a special invitation.
So you felt like part of the team.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
Now, what was your impression of Jackie? Everybody asked you that, I'm sure.
Good. Yeah, I respected him. He was just as calm as we're talking here.
Yeah.
And it's fair to say, a short time I was there, and I know if I could, met him years ago later, if he still remembered me, I'm not.
That kind of a guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Campy was there at that time. Yeah.
Well,
that was really the beginning of their really good teams. Let's see, they
Campanella and Hodges at first, and Robinson and Pee Wee Reese.
Yeah, Billy Cox.
Billy Cox was at third.
The only thing I remember about Billy Cox is reading in that book, The Boys of Summer, is I don't even want to repeat the word. There's a word that's not used in polite society, but he used to repeat it over and over and over again at third base. I guess he had a fixation on it or something. But season was basically over. What happened then in 49?
I was on spring training with him in 49. And
things were looking good for you?
Yeah. You were... getting some write-ups. I was going to be opening day pitcher.
I'm going to make sure that I flip this here. Okay.
And being opening day pitcher, and Chapman wish he had three more or a couple more like me or something like that,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I was pitching against Boston.
In the spring training.
In spring training in Miami. And I had some pretty good in this or one particular game I was going to start. And against Boston, and I warmed up and I came in to the dugout and I don't know how I was feeling. I said, "Oh, I just don't feel right." And he said, "Well, go ahead and try it, and if it don't work out," he said, "we'll put somebody else in."
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do? You know.
Yeah. You're still proving yourself.
Yeah,
and still trying to win a job. Yeah.
And back then, you had 10 guys back here.
Sure.
Wanting your job.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was the same way. Hey, I'm trying to get one of their jobs. And first inning, I think I walked two, and then Robinson made an error, and the bases loaded. And on it, Robinson, he's coming in apologizing for about making
really?
After
to a rookie kid.
Yeah. Making an error. While you're pitching, he comes in apologizing. Making an error, bases are loaded, and I struck two out, and somebody popped out, and so that was done in that pitch. I think four innings,
mm-hmm.
and had no problems after that. And they thought that was great. Bases loaded and outs,
sure.
And first inning, get them out, two strikeouts and pop out, and then that's when I hurt my arm, and the next day I just and every couple of days, they'd be coming around, wanting you to, how you feeling today, big boy? You ready to throw a little bit today? And they just keep hurting.
Sure.
Some of the older guys would, tell them your arm's hurting. I'm going to screw you around like that, and so forth. And they're interested in winning games. That's not their arm.
So, part of you knew that you were hurting yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the other part wanted to make an impression, too.
Yeah, I still got a...
Was the problem ever diagnosed, Elmer, or what?
Well, they sent me to Highland in St. Louis, and Dr. Highland in St. Louis, he was posting in one of the better ones at that, and Dr. Bennett in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to get those were two postmen, two of the best ones at that time. And Bennett in Baltimore was treating Joe DiMaggio on the seal at that time on a spur.
Yeah.
And in the New York paper, I remember DiMaggio's headlines. And
sure, I remember it well.
Then down the bottom one, and he was treating the homosexual.
Yeah, you got in the column with Joe DiMaggio.
Well, that was my fame there then. So then they kept me to after July when they get down to 25 players,
mm-hmm.
and that's when Ricky.
But you were with. They carried you that whole time.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then Ricky called me in and said they were going to put me on waivers, and they waited until everybody got down to 25 players, so it's hard to they already cut their excess, and
sure.
He wanted to protect me, and so anyway, then Philadelphia bought me.
Oh.
And put in a waiver to build I was out on the diamond, one evening, and this is how I found out about it. One of the newspaper reporters come out, and I was in uniform, he come out, and he says, what are you doing out here? You've been sold.
What a way to find out, huh?
Philadelphia. Huh. I go back in the clubhouse and change clothes.
Yeah.
And
how were you feeling? How did that feel then? It had to be a little discouraging.
That's a little alarming.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to take.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about that time, I mean, July, they're starting to realize, too, I mean, they can't carry it too long.
Everybody
needs somebody.
And then, did they ever find out what the problem with the arm was?
No. And then I went over to Philadelphia, and Bob Carpenter was owner then.
Yeah.
And Sawyer was the manager.
Eddie Sawyer.
And they were going to send me to Doc Nate. Acting on the tips of their scouts because my pitching is in Terre Haute, and was a Philly farm system there. And they said they were acting on the tips of their scouts, and they knew I had hurt my arm, and I was just going to throw a bat in practice and rest, and they were going to send me to doctors and osteopaths and chiropractors, and actually send me to Temple University in Philly and so forth. And that's through bat in practice. And that kept me the rest of the year. Just doing what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then the following year, that's when I went spring training with him again.
How was the arm at that time?
And I was still being bothered.
Now you went to Wilmington for a couple games though.
Oh, that was this.
Oh, okay, that was that's right.
It was spring training. And spring training with the Phillies then, Clearwater. And then said. And that's when they sent me to Delaware.
Oh, okay. And the records he pitched in two games, he won one, lost one.
You won Wilmington?
Yeah.
I pitched in two and
won one, lost one. It's the only data available.
Yeah. So then the older guys, before I left Philadelphia, then they talked about voluntary retirement. And the older guys said, well, then put you on voluntary retirement. They do, and he said, then they forget about you.
Mm.
And he said, get your release, and then you can always sign with somebody else. And so that's why I stuck to get my release. Then I went back to St. Louis and played what they call Muni League.
Now, what happened in 50? You went to Davenport, though.
Well,
how did you end up there?
That was after I got released from.
Oh, and then you went back home and played local ball, and then you.
No.
What was the sequence then with Davenport?
That was after I got released from Wilmington.
Okay.
That's it should be the same year.
Well, it says it's a different year here. If he's got it right. Maybe he's got it wrong.
I thought it was.
So you would be more likely to know.
Well, I'm sure it was. I got released from Wilmington, and because we bought a new Studebaker in Philadelphia, because that's the only car you could get.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And it was one of them bullet.
Sure, I remember it well.
Jobs.
Yeah, couldn't tell whether it's coming or going.
And somewhere or another, had a couple contacts. They were looking for pitchers, and someplace along the line, Davenport came up.
Now you signed directly with Davenport. That was your. It wasn't with the big league club. It was with Davenport.
Oh,
that
way, yeah.
Okay.
They were independent owned then. So I mean.
Okay, but part of the three I league. Now what? You pitched in four games there, 14 innings, walked 15. It looks like you just the arm was kind of shot by that time.
Yeah.
Then, huh?
Yeah, I still have. I couldn't power through.
Just go through the motions. How did you know it was over?
You can't get anybody out.
It's
over.
Nothing settled. Did Davenport release you then? And...
Yeah, I guess they did. I'm sure they
okay.
had to.
Well, what did you do? Well,
I went back to St. Louis and I played in the Muni League, but we played on Sunday. And, we played with the Kellys and Kudus undertaking home. And, I could pitch once a week and get by. Then you only got maybe one or two guys on it.
Yeah. Wasn't the same.
Yeah, and the rest of them, I mean, you could, at that time I knew enough about how you could change up and curve and throw at somebody and keep them loose and so forth. And maybe you had one or two guys that were good you could bear down on. Yeah. And
you learn more the veteran skills.
Then I had some, I don't remember who it was, Elrond wanted me to go away as playing manager. And if I could throw whenever I wanted to. And, back then, though, I didn't. As a playing manager, there was no future in that either.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to carry the bats and balls and drive the bus.
a wonderful honor, huh?
Yeah. And then, I knew myself, too, then. I'd pitch on Sunday. On Monday, I had to drive a car. I had to pick up my arm.
Oh, really?
And put it on the steering wheel. And I couldn't pull my hair.
And the problem was never, ever diagnosed.
No, both the doctors, they said pulled tendons or pulled muscles, and just rest.
But now, looking back, Elmer, I mean, things are really going well. Do you look back with regret? Do you look back with, hey, I was lucky? What kinds of? I mean, you have to have had a couple of what ifs.
If you would have made it. Mm-hmm. Or had a couple good years, you've been set name rise or do about anything you want.
Sure.
And then I think, well, maybe the Lord says that everything happens for the best.
So, yeah.
I mean, got married and we had three children and they're all college graduates and never had any problems and being called at 12 o'clock at night in order to come back.
Yeah.
Down to pick them up out of
bail them out,
anything like that. So, and they were all two boys were at football, basketball, and baseball through and high school, and coaches were always looking for him. And the oldest one, he did take a football scholarship to Butler in Indianapolis.
Yeah,
and our youngest one, he come down to Jacksonville here on a junior college and. 2 years and as a catcher, and then he ended up going over to Lafayette, Louisiana, southwest Louisiana, for 4 year college down there as a catcher. They were looking for a catcher at that time, and they picked him up from a junior college and come over here. So he had the good arm and both good size. But he couldn't hit the curveball.
I think that's an old story.
He was always batting eighth in the lineup.
Yeah.
He had everything else, but
you could have super defensive skills and still hit 230 or 240 to stay.
Well, now with the expansion leagues, and he had a chance. But,
the timing was off. Well, you know, when you look back, what are some of the really great memories that you have from those days?
Well, just being
doing it.
Just the opportunity of making as far as you did.
Yeah.
And which was always a dream for me to do, which I said, I told my mother I was going to buy her a big home someday when I'm going to become a baseball player, but that didn't happen.
But Elmer, you got in this book. I mean, I don't know how many. Well, you got to see this anyway. Yeah, I mean, how many guys are in this? This is going back 125 years. These are the guys who made it. And there's not many in this book. I looked for my name and I couldn't find it. I went 1-for-7. I played in the same league as Tony Kubek. I went 1-for-17 and struck out 13 times, and so that went my career. There you are. Right. there.
not a lot.
Elmer, you're in there.
Not a whole lot down there.
You're there. And that was the dream of so many kids, but you made it. Would you do it the same way again if you had to do it all over again?
I've probably been a little more cautious on how I handled myself.
How you treated your arm, you mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's hard to see how. That I guess that's the strain of it. On one hand, you want to impress and you want to show people you got a good attitude. You don't want to look like a crybaby, but yet you know what that arm feels like.
Yeah, when you know there's back then, there's 10 of them back here waiting for your job.
Yeah.
And well, there's 10 ahead of you too, so you
can't
get one of theirs. So.
Well, I was asked.
Impress somebody.
The president of Sabre asked me to ask you if you. He knew Rex Barney when Barney, I guess he became a broadcaster. Any particular things you remember? He said, ask him if he remembers Rex Barney.
Oh, yeah, I remember Rex Barney. I remember him well, and the opinions in the dugout then was, I mean, he was always walking up and down the stands, taking his hat off, and he always took his hat off, and he was watching up and up and down the stands, trying to see some gal up.
Yeah, he had a good eye, huh?
That was my, and I saw him pitch his no-hitter.
Oh, you did?
That was against the Giants in the Polar Grounds.
I guess he had some control problems once in a while.
Yes, that was his problem because nobody even realized until about this seventh inning, I guess, in the dugout, they start talking, trying to figure out, nobody's got a hit yet. But every inning he had two or three of them on base.
Yeah, so it didn't look like a no-hitter.
No. Everybody's trying to figure out, did somebody got a hit yet? Somebody got a hit yet, didn't they? Oh.
Good guy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I can't pick anybody out that I didn't. Like Campanella, I mean, he was always kind of on the reserve side.
Was he?
Yeah. I mean, he'd be in his room and he'd talk to anybody who wanted to talk to him.
Yeah.
Talk about baseball all the time.
Who did you room with with the Dodgers?
I had a couple different, I don't remember, a couple different ones. And one swing we made in St. Louis, I roomed with a bat boy. And I guess that was the first part. And I got a book in there where he wrote about that.
He made a lot of people's books.
And he'd never been out of Brooklyn, and they awarded him a trip west.
Oh yeah, last trip.
Yeah. And before that, I don't know who I roomed with in. Maybe Irv Kalika, or I don't remember who, in Boston. On that trip anyway, it was the bat boy. And he wrote to him there about him and I. His roommate was Elmer Sexsauer, and he wasn't too happy with rooming with the bat boy.
I guess everybody else was taken by that time.
And he was saying, he chose his bed, and he left me in the other bed or something like that.
I think the rank does have some privileges there.
And then he wrote another. And then he says something else he mentioned in his book there about coming back to New York, getting off the train, and he's walking down the train station, and the gals were coming up wanting his autograph. He kept telling them that he was a bat, he wasn't a player, he was a bat boy. They kept saying, well, we heard that story before. You're not the bad boy. And he says, I signed it Elmer Sexsauer.
Somebody probably still has that. He has it framed and probably sold it for $150.
So that was it.
Well, what did you do after baseball then?
I got into sales and food.
Oh, you did? Oh.
Ended up retiring from Dean's Food.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Heard of Dean's up in Milwaukee, haven't you?
Sure.
Dean's milk, ice cream.
Yeah, so you were around Milwaukee a little bit.
No, not the...
Oh, you didn't get back to the headquarters?
Yeah.
It's too cold, Elmer.
Well, their home office was in Chicago, Dean School.
Yeah.
When I was with Kraft. And then I was with Kraft, and I called on a group of stores in Indianapolis, National Tea Stores.
Yeah.
And I called on them for about 14 years. And then they approached me about coming to work for them, being in charge of their dairy and frozen food, part buyer and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that time you got a little more money and so forth. So, okay. Mm. So I went with them. And 9 years, and they sold out after you had to be with them 10 years
and
getting invested rights.
That far away, yeah.
And, 9 years, so by being in management, they gave me some severance pay, and then that's when Dean's called me then and asked me if I'd be interested, he'd like to talk to me.
Okay.
So that's when I went to Dean's.
So it didn't...
Being in charge of, in charge of the sales firm.
Okay. So it didn't miss a beat.
No, they told me they wouldn't, I wouldn't be with them long enough to get retirement, but they would take care of me. And then after I got with them, I didn't have anything in writing, and some of the other guys, and said, well, you should have something in writing, and because the ones that tell you, they retired, and they moved on too, you know. But then my boss in Indiana, he knew it, and so I got a little retirement from them.
Yeah. Well, you've got a beautiful house and a beautiful place and a successful family. And
yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you talk about, sorry, and in a way you are, you wish you, I mean, you read about some of these other guys, not saying all the money, but they should have gotten maybe, I'll say, 3 or 4 good years out of it or something like that. And,
well, it probably would have been, it was probably more difficult because you did have a lot of success. I mean, you were good. I mean, you had second in earned run average in the 3 I League, and if you would have been bombed out right away, then you said, well, give it a shot, but you...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Feel like you were on the road, but yet something happened. Maybe the good Lord says, well, you know.
Let's decide that's the way it is, Elmer.
Yeah, life is like that. You take the good with the bad and move on.
Yeah, you don't have any choice, you know. Well, you did what hundreds and I don't know if kids want to do that anymore, but we all did when we were kids.
Yeah.
And you did it.
Mm-hmm.
Elmer, thanks.
Okay.
I really appreciate the time, and, you know, it's stranger called.
Audience, and we thank you for your continued support of the Community Chorus. In the name of the entire chorus, our president, Chris Folger, Jerry and Nancy, I invite you to join us for fellowship and refreshments in the lower hall immediately following the concert. You can get to the lower hall using the stairway to the right of me or the stairway in the lobby area. May all the joys of the holiday fill your heart and your home to the brim this Christmas. We close our program tonight with a blending of two songs that ring out our Christmas wish for each of you. Carol of the Bells and Peace, Peace with soloist Helen Brown.